Good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday. Do people still call Wednesday hump day, Heath, Scott?
I think so.
Not in my circles.
Yeah, I think it's kind of out.
Well, it was always a little uncomfortable, let's be honest.
Why?
Yeah. I'll let you use your imagination there.
Well, I know that I have had the Jonah Carey, Oh Sherry theme song in my head for the last 4 or 5 days. I hope all of you have as well. I want to thank Jonah again for coming on, airing on Monday's show if you missed that. So make sure you check that one out. I'm Adam Mazur with Scott White, and Heath Cummings is back. Welcome back, Heath. How was the rest of Fuller House?
I have not finished it yet. I am now through episode 10.
There's more than 10?
I think there's 14 in season 1, and they've already renewed for season 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, okay.
So, you know, what I found was my daughter really, really likes it, more than I do even.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's, you know.
Teenage girls might be their target audience.
That's a better reason to watch, I think.
You know, I maybe even a little younger. I don't know. Is Hunter Pence in it yet?
That's the next episode.
Oh.
That's the one we'll probably, I don't know if we'll watch it tonight, but
okay.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Hunter Pence is in the notes for today's show. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I. Now that the position previews are over, we'll definitely have more time for emails. And today what we're going to do is, in addition to reading emails and tweets, we're going to go through some of the latest news, and we're going to sort of recap our position previews, and this should not be a replacement for them. If you haven't listened, you should try to make time and go back and listen to them. We talk about a lot of players. But just give our quick thoughts on our strategies so far and for each position. And, you know, we've got an auction today, so cannot wait for this auction. Oh, my gosh. I really care, like, so much, maybe more than any other fantasy league in any other sport that I'm in, guys.
Oh, you're so invested in auction teams because, you know, every player you make a conscious decision, this is going to be my guy.
Right.
And you go out and get him.
Yep. And you, I think you plan into the future, like, well, the 3 or 4 hours of the auction future, not like months ahead, but you set up your auction. It's not like a draft where it's sort of you have to see how it unfolds and you react. I kind of feel like there is an element to that in an auction, but also I kind of feel like you have to have a strategy going into an auction and you try your best to implement it while making adjustments on the fly.
I have a pretty simple strategy. I just nominate all the guys that I know that Scott likes more than everybody else.
So it's like who?
You know, the Danny Valencias, the Logan Forsythes, the Rich Hills.
No, it's gonna be, you know, that may have worked to some degree in the AL only league, but in a mixed league, that you're talking about guys who may very well go for a dollar, so.
Right, that's true.
So you're putting yourself on the hook there.
But if I nominated them for $1, they won't go for $1 probably. Scott White knows that Logan Forsythe's going for at least $2.
Okay.
Hey, Scott.
Right, we'll see.
Scott, are you gonna go Trout Harper for like $110?
I'd rather not tip my hand.
Okay.
We can talk about it after the fact.
Okay. All right. That works. So we'll definitely, talk about that probably tomorrow or Friday. And let's get to it, guys. I have something to correct from what I said yesterday in our relief pitcher preview. I think I said that Francisco Rodriguez is almost 40. And, if I said that, I apologize. He's only 34. He feels old.
You're almost 40, Adam.
Yeah. No, I'm not even 32 yet, so.
I'm the closest to 40.
Yeah.
I think I'm the closest of all of us, because Al's farther past 40 than I am at getting to 40, so.
That is true. You are the closest. You and, like, Dave and Jamie, right around the same age.
Yeah, they're closer than me.
So K-Rod's not as old as I thought. How safe do you think K-Rod is? Heath, you weren't on yesterday's show.
I don't feel like he's particularly safe.
Why is that?
And I don't know. I think he has a high implosion potential that might just partially be because we've seen basically every closer the Tigers have tried over the last 3 years implode. And I don't know if some of that's rubbing off, which isn't fair to him at all. But you don't feel like he's safe, do you, Scott?
No, I mean, he's safer in my mind than some of the closers you'll be drafting in the same range.
And I don't
I'm
know
trying
where
to think
he's
of
being drafted.
Their names are
right.
Actually, I have ADP pulled up here, so I can just check.
You think he's like? See, I've got the 13th closer off the board.
Well, according to that ADP,
right?
Yeah, that sounds pretty shaky. Like I actually think Jonathan Papelbon's a little safer. Houston Street, Sean Tolleson. It might be a toss up between Tolleson and K-Rod. AJ Ramos, you can't really assess him based on ADP because he just got anointed the closer.
That's
by
skyrocket.
Default. Yeah.
Well, so, let me.
I see. I think he's more in like the Santiago Casilla range.
He's better than Casilla, and I think there's the alternatives aren't as clear as for Casilla.
That part's true. Yes.
All right. Let's get to our email of the day. It's from Brian in Towson, Maryland, and he says, "Hello, Daniel Caffey, Joanne Galloway, and Nathan R. Jessup."
That is a few good men.
That is a few good men. I've never seen a few good men.
Are you kidding me?
I know, and
you
I'm not proud.
You can't handle the truth. That's
I'm
one
not
of my
proud.
Favorite movies. I would, definitely really? My favorite Tom Cruise movie.
Ooh, okay. I'd like to see it. I will see it. All right, he says, "I absolutely love the show. I look forward to listening each day. I just listened to the relief pitcher preview, wondering if you could take a minute to discuss if you would draft Dellin Betances in a 12-team roto leagues and other relievers that are comparable to Dellin Betances. I could keep him for $1 in my league, and he's the one player I'm unsure of if he is a good value. Thank you, and keep up the great work." Dellin Betances, guys.
There is no comparable to Dellin Betances. Let's just say that right off the bat. He pitches so many more innings than the average reliever that his strikeout total is as high as, you know, some fringy starting pitchers.
It's about 135.
So, yeah. So that makes him really the only setup man I would consider drafting. Now, he still tends to go earlier than I'd take him. In our mocks, I feel like he usually goes around round 15. But the fact he's going to give you the super low ERA and whip of a stud closer, but with even more innings and with an even better strikeout total, I think makes it justifiable at that point. Now, obviously, the question was addressed for roto leagues and points leagues where, you know, he's just a low number of innings compared to a SPARP and then not getting the saves. He's really useless in that format. But roto, yeah, he definitely has some value.
I was trying to remember where he went in last week's roto draft.
Well, let me ask you this.
21st round.
What round? 21st?
21st, right. Two picks before Rich Hill.
What
seems like good value. Seems
I'd rather have Betances than Rich Hill.
Yeah.
Give me a dollar value.
Sorry, keep interrupting you.
No, it's all right. Give me a dollar value. $260 budget that we're doing today. How much would you expect or how much would you pay for Dellin Betances?
I'd be surprised if he goes for more than two.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'd probably only pay one, but I could see someone going two or maybe even three depending on when he's nominated.
Let's get to the news and notes, guys. Ryan Braun is timetable pushed back from the second week of spring training to the third week of spring training, but still expected to be ready for opening day. And what does this news mean for you guys on Ryan Braun?
I don't like timetables getting pushed back in general. I feel like once you start pushing them back, it just seems easier to keep pushing them back. And it makes me a little uneasy. But at the same time, I've already kind of pushed Ryan Braun to the back of that Cespedes, JD Martinez, Adam Jones group. And, you know, I'm not going to push him beyond Carlos Gonzalez because I feel like the risks for Gonzalez are inherent. And I'm just not sure there's any more room to push him back without running into clearly a less talented group in the outfield.
And I feel like Braun's, like, this injury risk, it is so well known even 2 months ago, just because it's Ryan Braun, that it's been baked into his average draft position. He's being taken after Gonzalez, after Gomez, after all those guys Scott mentioned, after Lorenzo Cain. And so, I you can't really drop him. Are you going to drop him below Jason Hayward?
Exactly.
Maybe you should be patient with Braun. Sometimes we see guys who get a late start in spring training get off to slow starts, so we could talk about that if he struggles, but I don't know, maybe it's something you should even expect. So perhaps be patient with him. I hate guys. I hate when players miss spring training and don't have normal springs, and then the year after they're talking about, well, I wasn't healthy last year during spring training and it threw me off the entire time. You know, like,
yeah.
I feel like that happens a lot.
No, you're right. And this is something I was actually thinking about this morning, because I feel like now in in retrospect, we're making a lot of cases for players. Oh, he had surgery at the start of last season, and so he wasn't quite right. He had this mechanical issue or wasn't able to use his legs right or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Martinez and Garrett Richards immediately come to mind. I've made that case just in the last couple days for both of them.
Right.
And so shouldn't that be some kind of cue that maybe you should avoid these guys going into the season?
Well, I think you do avoid them, but he's not like it, except for when they're guys like Braun, where it's already being baked in, or
right.
Michael Brantley. Like,
but maybe it's not baked in enough. Maybe the risk isn't getting enough credit. And I'm not saying like
right.
We both made the argument. Well, we can't really lower him anymore in the rankings. But there's, you know, I'm certainly willing to.
You're gonna take him at the end of the fifth.
Leap a guy in my rankings just because I don't trust him.
You're gonna take Ryan Braun if he's still there at the end of the fifth.
Probably.
That's where, and then Brantley's not going until the end of the ninth.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, this is a half-baked idea right now, but I'm saying maybe I haven't given it as much thought as I should.
The one I worry more about, and I think it's later in the notes, is Giancarlo Stanton with the sore knee.
Let's go to that then.
He's not going to be discounted at all.
It's true.
Yeah, so knee soreness for Giancarlo Stanton. We'll just go straight to that, and he's gonna be a top, you know, six or seven pick in many drafts. He's the number three outfielder off the board, and going 7.5 overall in Fantasy Pros ADP. So this is a sign of concern for you. And by the way, I don't know if we can do this, but I think we should go back to last year or whatever and see if we can think of examples of players who were coming off surgery or were banged up in spring training and still did perfectly fine. Because I'm sure we could find some examples of those.
Yeah, I'm sure we could too. But the thing is, who remembers them
right,
at this
right.
point? Like, we're all paying so little attention to spring training, and if we were dismissing the injury in the first place, you know, it's not something we're going to keep in mind. That would be difficult to research. I'm not even sure there's a record of spring injuries that
I think we could look it up. Maybe if we look up last year's spring training stats and find a pitcher or something that only threw one start or, you know, got a late start to the season, and maybe he did just fine. But anyway, Giancarlo Stanton, Heath, what are you thinking there?
Well, it just, like I said, you're not getting him at a discount. You basically got to take him in the first five or six picks. This is apparently the same knee that he's had troubles with in the past. And we've had plenty of discussion around the office, I feel like, about whether Giancarlo Stanton, because of the time that he's missed, which has been with kind of some fluky injuries, whether he is officially injury prone. And I was on the side coming into this spring that probably not. Like, he got hit in the face. I'm not going to hold that against him. Yes, he had one knee problem. This worries me. Like, if he has the injury problems this year, then I think it's no question he's officially injury prone, right?
That would be the straw that breaks the camel's back for you.
Unless, like, for some people, I think that, not for all people, for me, yes. I think some people are already labeling him injury prone.
Yeah, I am. I'm willing to.
I'm not there yet, just because I'm not going to hold getting hit in the face
right
against him.
Well, it wasn't the only thing. How many?
That's not the only thing.
Okay.
but that's one of three. I guess what he's had, a shoulder, a knee, and a face.
Are you on ProachSportsTransactions.com?
No.
Looking at the injury history here?
I am not.
I'll do that for Giancarlo Stanton, because this is the power of the internet.
We can do things in real time, even though
Carlos
right,
Correa
so
or Giancarlo Stanton.
He's gone on the DL for in
all
his
right.
career. Arthroscopic knee surgery in 2012.
Okay.
Strained right hamstring. Fractured hand.
Right.
Which was a hit by pitch, right?
No, that was the year before.
Okay.
Well, fractured hand may have been hit by...
I think it was.
I don't remember if it was a hit by pitch or not. And really, those are the only DL stints of his career. I feel like there may be some injuries at the end where he didn't go on the DL.
All right, let me speed this up here. Giancarlo Stanton or Carlos Correa?
That's a debate I'm going... I have to do a rankings update today because I haven't updated over the last 4 days and there's a ton of news that's happened. And that is a debate that I'll have to have, but I'll probably still keep Stanton ahead of Correa.
Yeah, I would too.
All right. So Clayton Kershaw or Giancarlo Stanton?
You know I'm going Kershaw. I was all along.
Yeah, I'm not taking a pitcher in the first round, so.
So not much has changed.
Nothing against
now.
Clayton Kershaw.
Now, I thought Johnny Peralta was a decent fallback option if you completely neglected shortstop. And now he could miss 2 to 3 months with a thumb injury. So what does this do to the shortstop position, and what does this do to the St. Louis Cardinals?
A gross position gets grosser. I don't know that you really even like Peralta that much, Scott. I thought he was a fine fallback option. I was really pretty happy I'd gotten him in several drafts because he was falling forever. And there's just not, like, this position's awful. I don't know, unless I get Carlos Correa, I may just wait forever.
I don't know. I feel like things have changed at shortstop with the additions of Lindor, Seager, and Correa, and Bogart stepping up. So I'm not as down on it as you. You know, Jerko would be an attractive sleeper if he was promised every day at bats, but right now it seems like everything I'm reading suggests they'd rather not make him their everyday shortstop. They hope Aledmys Diaz becomes the guy and they can take over there. And he went 4-for-4 in a spring game yesterday, so the bat's really where he has to prove it. But even if Jerko was a sleeper, for all the good power potential he has, guys like Marcus Semien, Eugenio Suarez, they have good power potential and are shortstop eligible too, and I feel like they last pretty late in roto leagues.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I'm
that's why
sure.
I'm saying just wait forever. You can get Azdrubal Cabrera at the end of the draft.
Okay, but he's not that great.
Well, he's
I mean,
than
I'd
the
still,
guys.
I'd still rather have Seager in round six.
Yeah.
Myself, but oh, I hear what you're saying. There are some decent sleepers there late.
I think if you can get Tulowitzki in round four, it makes sense.
If you can, yeah.
That's where he's going.
That far in any of our drafts.
No, he hasn't. But in these other, in looking at this ADP on Fantasy Pros and four different sources, he's going round four or five. So, you know, I think that's decent value there. And in terms of shortstop, you know, we were going to talk about our strategies for each, but if you don't take somebody early and you're in a roto league, you could just wait, take Elvis Andrews late, take Alcides Escobar late or something like that and fill your, and help your steals.
Yeah, the problem is, in the drafts I've been in at least, those guys are going so much earlier than the guys that we were talking about, Eugenio Suarez, Azdrubal Cabrera, Marcus Semien, that I just end up taking one of those guys even later.
Okay, yeah, you could do that too. And then, of course, there's Jose Reyes who you could potentially stash as we wait to see what
Jung Ho Gong's a guy we should mention.
Oh, yeah.
I think Scott and I both love him at his average draft position.
Yep, Jung Ho Gong is going, he's 12th shortstop off the board. He's actually the 11th because they count Manny Machado. And Gong is going 174th overall, according to Fantasy Pros. So you might have to, let's just say, 13th round or something like that. But he's actually been going earlier, I think, in some of our drafts. What's the timetable?
Oh, yeah, because Scott or I wanted the two grabs him.
No, I like him too. What's the timetable for Jung Ho Gong?
At this point, it's been fairly optimistic that, like, it could be opening day, and worst case scenario, it should be the end of April.
Cool.
That's what I've been seeing.
Let's go through the news then. St. Louis, according to ESPN.com, Michael Wacha, they want him to work deeper into games. That can mean fewer strikeouts for Michael Wacha, pitching more to contact. Not good news for a guy who's already low on strikeouts.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was already the problem.
So does that concern you?
No. To a degree. I mean, he's outside that ace class for me, so I still think he's one of the more reliable near aces, I guess, there with Tanaka and Verlander.
Gotcha. All right, that's Michael Wacha.
Guys with big question marks.
Still firmly my second favorite Cardinals pitcher.
Carbart. Yeah. Okay, so you take both those guys over Wainwright?
I would, yes. Yeah. I'm an ageist.
You are? Well, Pedro Alvarez, I think he's like 29 years old. He's not that old, Pedro Alvarez, but he's an Oriole now. Yeah, he is 29 years old. And last year he hit .243, which is what he does, four straight seasons between .231 and .244. Alvarez hit 27 home runs in 150 games. He's, you know, good for around 30. So what about a .240 batting average and 30 home runs, unless there's a ballpark bump?
I think it's totally plausible. Camden Yards is a great place to hit for left-handers. It's certainly a much better hitter's park, a better park for hitters than PNC. Is it still called PNC? Where the Pirates play, you know, that park in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Pirates Park.
Yeah. So And yeah, I think that this signing, look, the Orioles had a glaring need there. DH, when the Fowler deal fell through, they were back to projecting Jimmy Paredes to start in that spot, which we found out final two-thirds of last year is not so great. So I think Alvarez is going to get consistent at-bats. They obviously don't have to worry about his defense, and I think this signing makes him an attractive late-round power pick in roto leagues.
He's
right there with Mark Trumbo for me in terms of how excited I am about investing a late-round pick in him.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You've updated your rankings since the Alvarez news. And
I planned to, but I saw I already had him that high.
Oh, okay.
So I already was anticipating a good situation for him.
I think that's right about where I'm going to have him, is right around 21st, 22nd amongst first basemen.
Yeah, Alvarez is only first base eligible. He's not third base eligible anymore, so keep that in mind. And a few more news items. Real quick, Henderson Alvarez hoping to join the A's rotation in May. Do you care?
Not really.
He'll okay. be a nice waiver wire pickup whenever he has two starts at home.
Hunter Pence dealing with an Achilles injury. It appears behind him. He should be ready to go later this week. But are you worried about Hunter Pence coming off his first season with injury concerns, now dealing with an Achilles injury in spring?
Not really. They keep saying this is ultra cautious. And I think they may have even said at one point if it was regular season, he'd be playing. So
okay,
not a big deal.
And Scott, I'm sorry, one of your sleepers, one of your deep sleepers, Aaron Altair, wrist surgery, out 4 to 6 months. Cross him off.
That's a blow. That's a blow. I invested, I think, $12 in him in the NL only auction as a power speed guy.
Oh, man.
I was hoping.
Well,
so already behind the, no, that's not the right expression.
Behind Abel?
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Behind, okay. For a second, I thought that was a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing.
It's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a bad
thing. I'm behind the eight ball.
It's only a good thing to be behind the eight ball if you've already knocked all the other balls in.
Right.
Well, listen,
well,
guys,
that's what I was thinking.
I think the Phillies are in trouble. I think they're going to struggle now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do.
This is going to be what does them in.
Yeah,
the straw that breaks the camel's back, to use the same cliche from before, because that's the only one that I remember what it means.
They just improved their chances in the race to the bottom league.
They are definitely behind the eight ball with this one. Let's talk strategy as we go through like 3 or 4 weeks of position previews here in 10 minutes. And then we'll read your emails and your tweets. So I'm going to give you a position. You tell me your strategy. You tell me maybe a good ADP and a bad ADP, or just something that stands out. Let's start with first base, Heath.
My strategy is take one in the first two rounds. It's really that simple, for me at least. I'm not saying that works for everyone, but I'm going to get one of the top seven in the first two rounds. When I'm looking at average draft position that I like, I guess it has to be Joey Votto, because he's going the last of those on Fantasy Pros. I'd expect that's going to actually be Chris Davis on CBS Sports will be the last first baseman taken. But both of those are currently going in the third round. I don't ever feel like safe enough to wait until the third round to take a first baseman.
Yeah.
Because I'm afraid I'm going to miss one of them.
If you're saying you're dead set.
Right. On taking one of the top seven.
That's what you're saying, basically. If you're saying Votto or Davis is the best value. I'm not quite as strict as you are.
Right.
I would like to take one in the first two rounds if it's the appropriate spot within those rounds to take them. If not, fall back on. You know, I was originally saying Freeman, Gonzalez, and Hosmer, but now the Pujols is going to be ready for the start of the season. I think he's the ultimate fallback option in round eight or so. So that's probably going to be the guy I get most often as my first baseman.
And I really don't like Adrian Gonzalez in the fifth round.
Same here.
Because I don't know that there's that much difference between him, Freeman, Hosmer, Fielder. And why pay an extra round or two for Gonzalez?
Yeah, it would be the last. They're all part of the same tier, so it would be the last of that tier that I drafted.
Yeah,
whoever it ends up being.
You know, in the roto draft that we did last week, my first two picks were McCutchen and Machado, and usually I like to take a first baseman there, but Machado's value in the second round was too good to pass up. So I took Freddie Freeman in, I don't know, maybe the sixth round or something like that, and I was very happy with it. You know, totally fine with that, but yeah, I would like to get one of those top seven. Scott, what about you? You're less rigid.
I was looking at who my ADP guy
That's fine.
Was.
I think you already kind of said you're less rigid. You're okay with those fallback guys, including Pujols.
Right, I'm less rigid. And look, if it's a roto league especially, I don't think it's, you know, with all the extra hitter spots, corner infield, middle infield, five outfielders, I think you can make up for a crappy first baseman easier than you can in points. So I could even go someone like Lucas Duda if I just really hated the value of everybody else. Yeah, ADP-wise, value I like. Pujols in round 8 is probably my favorite. And then I see Brandon Belt's going in round 11. I don't even know that we talked about him in the first base preview. I have no idea why he's getting so much love still. He's no different to me than like Adam Lind or Mitch Moreland. Doesn't play every day. Doesn't have a ton of power. Doesn't really stand out in any one category. So round 11 for him is really bad value.
Okay. Let's go to, let me ask you this to wrap up first base. Do you anticipate Prince Fielder gaining first base eligibility in our leagues? He only needs 5 appearances.
I do, but I have no idea when.
Right.
Hopefully into May.
If you were asking me if I thought he would before the season was over, I would absolutely say like 95% yes. If you're asking me if I think he will before the All-Star break, I would lower that to probably 40%.
Okay. On to second base. Heath, what's your strategy with second baseman?
It's largely been to wait if I don't take Altuve. I do think that D. Gordon's probably going to regress a little bit, so I'm not as excited about taking him. And I feel like at second base, there's more variance. And as I'm looking at the average draft position on Fantasy Pros, it looks like between the different sites, there is a lot of variance. And where guys like Brian Dozier or Rougned Odor or Anthony Rendon go. I mean, there's if Dozier's going to fall into the 6th round, then I'm going to take him.
Mm-hmm.
If Rendon falls into the 7th or 8th round, I'm going to take him.
So I might have the more rigid strategy, I guess, at second base. Yeah, I'll take Altuve early in round 2. I'll take D. Gordon late in round 2, particularly in a roto league where steals are so scarce. But beyond that, I'm waiting. Right. I mean, Rougned Odor, he's my favorite breakout, so I might take him as early as round 6. But, you know, to me, there's not much difference between Ian Kinsler and Joe Panik. And Joe Panik goes, on average,
at the end of the draft,
15 rounds later. Yeah, so... Which gives you an idea of ADP I like and don't like. Kinsler and Panik are probably my top choices there too. But, you know, not just Kinsler, also Dustin Pedroia or, you know, even somebody like Anthony Rendon with the power shortage he showed last year. I'm not totally sold that he's going to be a tier better than these other guys.
See, I like Rendon. If you can get him where his average draft position shows, which is basically the end of the 8th, start of the 9th round.
That is pretty good value.
There's a ton of upside still there for that late. And then there's a huge drop-off after Rendon. I mean, you wait 3 or 4 rounds before anybody takes another second baseman. And I feel pretty good about Colton Wong after the 10th.
I don't. I actually thought that was one of the worst values.
Okay.
That showed here, round 11 on average.
You think Colton Wong is stuck as a 240 hitter?
No, I like Colton Wong.
Okay.
I don't like the presence of Jed Jerko, given the lefty-righty splits both showed
Peralta
last year.
With Peralta out, doesn't that help?
Only if they're willing to make Jerko their shortstop, and again, I'm not confident in that.
Right.
So.
Wong did start in their first game against a left-handed starter.
Yes, he did.
Which is somewhat encouraging. Probably doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one thing we talked about on our second base preview is there are some deep players that probably won't get drafted in a lot of leagues. Like Joe Panik, the 25th second baseman off the board. But maybe Starlin Castro doesn't get drafted. Maybe Neil Walker, Josh Harrison, who's eligible everywhere. Jonathan Scope. Some deep sleepers that you should maybe be aggressive with. That was one of the takeaways we had at second base. Trey Turner, by the way, he's second base eligible. So could be Devin Travis. Could be some guys that don't get drafted that you might find on waivers early that have some breakout potential, and keep an eye on them.
It is, just to summarize, it is the position to wait at this year.
Okay.
You know, you don't get Altuve or whatever.
Right.
Now, third base. I want one of the top 9 or 10, and that would be Donaldson, Arenado, Machado, Bryant, Carpenter, Frazier, Rendon, Beltre, Seager, and then number 10 would be Franco. And I think, you know, Seager is very, very reliable, but you know, pretty much all those guys have so much upside. You know, maybe not all, but most to all of those guys have so much upside. So I don't want to rely on like a Moustakas or even a Jung Ho Kang. I'd rather him be my shortstop. I think there are 9 to 10 really good third basemen. They won't all pan out, but I approach it sort of like first base, where you want your top seven. Except difference is I don't like the fallback options as much after the top 10. How are you guys feeling about third base?
I pretty much agree with you about where you cut the tier off. I'm not excited about having Adrian Beltre, but we don't need to have that discussion again. My favorite in terms of value with where they're being taken of those guys is the last one, and that's Michael Franco going in the 10th round, I believe.
Yeah, that's really good value.
I'm fine taking him as early as the 7th.
I agree with you on what you said about Beltre and what you said about Franco. And pretty much agree with Adam's assessment that it's, you know, there's not a lot of depth at the position, so it's a one to pay up for.
The one thing I would say is you said you don't want to play Jung Ho Kang at third base. Well, if I've taken Correa in the first, I'm very happy with Jung Ho Kang as my third baseman when you can take him so late.
Yeah, that's totally
that's
fair.
That's good too. I was going to add the one exception maybe to, you know, feeling like you have to reach at the position. Mike Moustakas is going in round 14 on average, and I still don't really understand why we're valuing him so differently from Kyle Seager. I mean, I know he hasn't done it as many years as Kyle Seager does, but they were basically the same player last year. They were. Moustakas was actually the better contact hitter, and he has been a good he has made a lot of contact throughout his career last year.
But you know why we don't value them the same, because Moustakas was a total bust before last year, and even last year was very streaky.
Right. Well, I don't know. I still feel like round 14 is overstating the lack of track record from Moustakas, considering he had always shown this kind of contact rate, and finally it translated the numbers. He started hitting the ball the other way more. I don't know. I think he's a good value.
He's in a good offense. I think I don't particularly love Moustakas. I think there's a lot of risk there, but if he's the 15th shortstop off the board and third baseman, and he's going in the 14th or 15th round, then yeah, that's great. He's going after Daniel Murphy.
That's fair. All right. Shortstop. I usually wait as long as possible if I don't. Well, that's not necessarily true, but I'm okay waiting as long as possible because, you know, once you've waited, like, it's not like third base where you need a top 10. Like, if you don't get one of the, like, really high end guys, then you might as well just wait on shortstop, I feel.
Well, I don't know. Where do you cut off the high end guys? Because at first base, it cuts off early round 3, basically. When
I think
Abreu and Davis are gone.
I think after the Bogaerts, Seager, Lindor group.
Yeah.
Then you shouldn't reach.
Okay, that's fair. One exception, maybe Jung Ho Kang, who Heath and I like.
Now, hey, wait. Just to be fair about Jung Ho Kang, he is a guy that's missing.
That's true.
Missing all of spring training, and
he's the guy that's going to be hurt.
Having a normal offseason.
You're right. But I mean, the upside for him compared to everyone else below him, it doesn't even compare. So I think it's worth the gamble.
If he's the number 2 shortstop, I'm not going to be surprised.
But the other point I was making was that, well, at first base, you kind of just have to get lucky to get an elite guy. You only have 2 picks to do it, basically, mm-hmm. and there might be somebody much more obvious to take instead. At shortstop, if you really want one of Seager, Lindor, Bogaerts, you can make it happen pretty easily, and you probably don't even have to dip into round 5 to do it. I don't think we've had a mock yet where one of them wasn't available in round 6.
No, I think
and
so.
And Lindor, I got him in round 7 of our most recent one. So that's why I don't consider shortstop the position to wait at this year.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that I consider it the position to wait at, but if you strike out on all those guys, I don't think there's much of a difference probably between like number 8 and number, you know, 16 necessarily, especially in Roto if you're just looking for steals.
Right.
So you could be the last person to take a shortstop and be okay with it.
I've ended up with a lot of Jung Ho Kang and Ketel Marte, which Marte is going, I think, in the 20th round. So you can just wait until that's the end of the draft for him.
Right. How about outfield? Scott, what's your thoughts on outfield this year?
Well, I know Al and I think Heath, too, consider it pretty shallow, maybe compared to last year's. And there is a steep drop-off around the number 25. But at the same time, I feel like it's a position that's never going to be short on sleepers just because there's three players. There's 90 players who start there across the majors. There's so much volume that there's going to be players we don't even see coming. And if you're paying attention on waivers, chances are you're going to get one or two of them. So obviously I don't want to have a weak outfield coming out of the draft, but in a three outfielder league, I'm afraid of like clogging up those spots too early. I don't want two high end outfielders unless, you know, it's like Mike Trout and Mookie Betts or something ridiculous.
Heath? But, oh, sorry.
For the most part, I don't want to overdo it by taking too many too early.
I usually end up with one of my top 10. And then I just wait to see of that. I mean, Scott said there was a big drop off after 25, but even those guys, I feel like between 12 and 25, they've all got some concern.
Yeah. That was the Braun group we were talking about.
Yes. The Adam Jones, the Justin Upton, the Lorenzo Cain, Carlos Gonzalez. And so what I generally do is I just wait and see which one of those guys is going to fall. And it's usually Adam Jones. Or at least it has been, is the guy that falls farther than I think he should. So I've ended up with a lot of Adam Jones. I wouldn't be surprised if starting today, until Ryan Braun starts doing good things, Braun becomes the one that falls. And if he is, I'll probably end up with a lot of Ryan Braun as my number two outfielder.
The trickiest part in fantasy to me, one of the trickiest parts is when you've got a really good outfielder on the board, but you've got like a shortstop or a second baseman that's not going to be as good as the outfielder, but when it comes to position scarcity might be a better value. So if you're sitting there in like round four or five and you're deciding between a Brian Dozier and a Yoenis Cespedes or something like that, that's always a tough choice for me. And sometimes I just take the best player available and I say, damn you, position scarcity. I don't care. I just want to stay
here. I
got to
tell you, this isn't the greatest year for playing position scarcity because there's not an especially deep position. I guess second base comes the closest. And there's not an especially thin position. Shortstop stronger than in years past. First base, even though it's thinner than we're used to, I mean, there's still plenty of fallback options there for guys who are going to give you 20 to 25 home runs. So I almost, you know, in points leagues and in head-to-head leagues where you have the smaller lineups and not the middle infield, the corner infield, the two extra outfielders, you have to pay more attention to it because there's not as many ways to make up for going weak at a position.
Mm-hmm.
But in roto leagues, I almost pay no attention to position scarcity this year.
In points leagues or in roto leagues?
Roto leagues with the extra hitter spots to fill.
Okay. All right, fellas. Let's go to starting pitcher then. And
okay.
We'll wrap this up soon and get to the emails. Starting pitcher, Heath, your strategy.
I'm not going to take one in the first round. I'm almost for sure not going to take one in the second round based on where guys are going. And I'm going to take two in the next three rounds is the way that it's largely worked out. I want to have two of those top 18 or 19 guys. And I'm probably not going to get any of the top three or four.
Yeah, I think that sums it up nicely. I think we've seen I'm a little more willing to go with a third starting pitcher in the first six rounds if the value is appropriate than you are.
Right.
Because I think, you know, compared to the hitters that are going at that point, it's no contest who the stud is. And I'm also a little more willing to go for Clayton Kershaw in round one than you are. But otherwise, it's the same basic approach. Round three is usually when I take my first one. Maybe round four instead. Definitely want to within the first five.
We did see something interesting. The one time that Scott has taken Kershaw was our mixed roto mock last week. And I think that was also the first time that he only had one pitcher through four rounds and two through six or so.
Yeah, I still ended up with Carrasco. Yeah, I got Carrasco in round six. He was my second starting pitcher.
Which if you can get Carlos Carrasco in round six, doesn't matter how many pitchers you have.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, Heath, you talk about rounds three and four being your starting pitchers. But if you're okay with having, let's say, Carrasco and Archer as your top two.
Well, okay, four and five.
Yeah, you could wait till rounds four and five to take starting pitchers.
I do think part of that is dependent on where you are, like if you're on one of the ins,
yeah,
it can be risky if you're like if you had an early pick to wait till the 4 or 5 turn, because then you're talking about right around pick 50, and some of those guys might be gone.
I think too, Adam, that it would make more sense to wait until round 4 and just go 4 or 5 if the hitters in round 3 were more palatable. But a lot of times it's like, do I reach for JD Martinez in round 3 or just trust that it'll be there in round 4 like usually is?
Right.
Or do I take the better pitcher?
Yeah.
Corey Kluber is one of the guys I've taken a lot in the third round.
And finally, with relief, my last thing I want to say that there are so many good young pitchers. We talk about them all the time. Taijuan Walker, Lance McCullers, Raisel Iglesias, Luis Severino. The list goes on. I want to try to get two of them and hope that at least one has a huge season. Okay. A lot of good high upside pitchers, so don't draft too many too early. And finally, relief pitchers. Al, Scott, and I all talked about it yesterday. Heath, what's your strategy on RP?
I think the opposite strategy of everyone, and I basically wait for the first relief pitcher to get taken, and then I'm going to get one of the elite ones,
which is Wade Davis.
It's usually Wade Davis, unless Wade Davis is the first one taken.
I think I've only seen you take him as the first one.
No, he's definitely been taken in at least one mock when I didn't take him.
Oh, okay.
I am not, like, generally in our drafts, and I don't know how much this varies in the industry, because when I look at their average draft position and see that some of these guys are being taken in the 5th and 6th rounds, that doesn't happen in our drafts. It's usually the 7th or 8th. And I have ended up with a lot of 7th and 8th round Wade Davis. But if Wade Davis is the first one taken, I'm perfectly happy taking Kenley Jansen right after him.
All right. And you could just listen to yesterday's podcast for our thoughts on how to approach the position. It was a good podcast. Enjoy it. Emails and tweets. This is from Mike. Can you touch on how you would approach leagues that use left field, center field, and right field instead of just outfield?
Oh, I honestly couldn't very well, because I don't know which outfielders qualify where. I mean, certainly if one stands out as weaker than the other two, that does become a position scarcity situation. I mean, it's almost like treating it like the separate infield spots. It's like a shortstop versus a second baseman, a left fielder versus a right fielder. It'd be the same sort of situation.
I would probably lobby for a rules change.
I would guess that left field is the scarcest.
Yeah, it seems like things have been trending that way. It used to always be center field, because obviously that was defense premium position. And it still is, but it seems like there are a lot of good hitters now there.
Okay, fellas. So yesterday maybe it was Monday, somebody asked, who's this year's AJ Pollock? And that meant, based on a small sample size of really good play, who could have a monster year in 2016? So EJ in Austin suggests Chris Davis, who had 27 home runs in 121 games last year, and he did have
Chris
a stretch late in the season that was just absolutely absurd, where he had an OPS, I think, over 900. But anyway, Chris Davis is EJ's suggestion to be this year's AJ Pollock. That's Chris Davis with a K, by the way.
Yeah, Chris Davis isn't near as good as AJ Pollock. He could maybe have a breakout in terms of home runs, except for the fact that that likelihood took a big hit when he got traded to the Athletics.
Yep, it did.
And I don't view him as the same type of player that's going to do everything.
Right. I mean, AJ Pollock is such a well-rounded hitter and really excels on the peripherals when Chris Davis, it's basically home run or bust with him. Trying to think of a good comp for Chris Davis's upside. That's not too high end, because the other Chris Davis would be too high end.
Yeah, poor man's other Chris Davis.
Well, why isn't JD Martinez his upside?
Maybe. I think JD Martinez has shown an exceptional ability to hit for a high BABIP that Chris Davis hasn't shown.
Yeah.
But if Chris Davis has a lucky year, yeah, he could be something like JD Martinez.
You know what? Maybe Pedro Alvarez.
If you're wanting a who could be this year's AJ Pollock, everybody's a long shot to be this year's AJ Pollock. There probably won't be a player as good as AJ Pollock was last year without being drafted in the first two rounds. But how about Yasiel Puig?
Oh, that's a good one.
How about Puig just puts it all together this year? He can do everything that Pollock does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a first-round value.
The guy I said yesterday was Michael Franco, which
yeah.
I think you'd probably agree with, too.
And he's even lower
yeah,
in terms of notoriety.
Yeah, see, I got mad when you said Michael Franco because you poo-pooed my Corey Seager because you were like, well, he's a high prospect and this and that, and then you went with a high prospect, so...
Well, yeah, but Michael Franco is going around 10 on average.
Yeah,
I think Pollock was probably in that 11 through 13 range last year, so it's not like he was, you know, nobody.
All right, all right. I forgive you. So here is Dan from a city in Ohio that begins with the letter C, but is not Cleveland, Columbus, or Cincinnati.
All right, then. And that exhausts my knowledge.
No, come on. There's an easy one here.
It's not Cleveland.
Canton. Yeah. Canton it is.
Good job, Scott.
Okay, he's
didn't
a first
exhaust my knowledge.
He's a first year listener and he loves the podcast, so thank you, Dan. For some reason I often have an urge to try the pitching steals strategy to win one of my head to head categories leagues. And I've had up and down results in the past. From what I'm reading and hearing from many experts and analysts this year, pitching is trending is more important than in the past, and consistent steals are really hard to find, unless you're willing to take the steal specialist Revere, Burns, Escobar. So, is this a good year to focus on pitching and steals? I never even heard of this strategy, by the way. What do you guys think?
I've never heard of this strategy either, but I think if I was going to go for this strategy, then I would go for steals guys that also hit for a good average and score runs.
Yeah, you don't want the one-trick ponies. But the thing is, most of those steals guys are gone by like round six. So, I get what... I haven't consciously made this a strategy,
right?
But I'm making pitching more of a priority in the first six rounds than ever, and I'm also making steals. You said you wouldn't take D. Gordon in round two,
right?
Anytime you cross kind of that Joey Votto, Edwin Encarnacion line, Buster Posey, we'll throw him in there too. Anytime you cross that line in round two, I think you have to take D. Gordon just because that gives you such an advantage at a position where everybody else is going to be hurting.
I'm just more fond, I think, of the late round steals guys than maybe you are.
But they don't do anything else. That's the problem.
See, they don't do batting average to the level that D. Gordon does. D. Gordon's not going to do batting average to the level he did last year. Almost assuredly.
But he's probably going to hit around 300.
Right. I think there's a chance Billy Burns could hit around 300.
I don't feel nearly as confident in it, though. Well, he's only going to deliver half as many steals. I mean, it's not like it's an even trade-off there.
That's true.
You're going to need
but you're going to need
two or three other steal guys along with Burns. When D. Gordon, you may just need one other big steals guy. Because you don't want to overdo it in the category.
Right.
That's just wasteful.
Yep.
And there's just few players who fill it this year. I think there's only, gosh, I think of the eight players who stole 30 or more bases last year,
yeah,
six of them are gone by like the end of round four.
Right. You got to find the guys that didn't steal 30 bases that you think will this year.
Head-to-head categories leagues are a little strange because, like, you know that if you have a roto league and you're putting D. Gordon in your lineup every week for 162 games or however many he plays, you can guess what his steal total is going to be. But it's hard to predict that week to week. So sometimes, you know, some weeks he might have a huge, he might have a huge month where he steals 15 bases, and then the next month doesn't do so well and doesn't really help you week to week in a head-to-head categories league. So I don't really like putting all my eggs in one basket in that format. I don't like the, you know, draft only relief pitchers and win WHIP, ERA, and saves strategy. And
I kind of like that one.
I don't know. I don't like it that much. It's not bad, but it's not for me because I don't think you're going to be able to pull it off with the hitter. I don't think your hitting is going to be good enough to justify it. Like, I don't think it's going to be guaranteed good enough to justify it. You're not guaranteeing yourself better hitting than everybody else.
Well, there's no guarantees. It's why we play the games.
No, but you are guaranteeing WHIP and saves and probably ERA, or close to it. Well, anyway.
Close to it.
Anthony in Haddonfield, New Jersey says, "Dear Danny, Jesse, and Joey."
Yes.
Who are they?
I'm in two fantasy baseball leagues this year. I have the first pick in both drafts. Would you draft the same player in both leagues or diversify your portfolio and pick different players?
I don't hate the idea of taking Trout in one and Harper in the other, to be honest.
Yeah, I've already written, if I get the first pick, I'm flipping a coin. So this is kind of like doing that.
Yeah, I'd take one in each.
Okay. And I think in roto leagues, Harper's going to be three for me behind Goldschmidt, behind Trout and Goldschmidt.
It's your prerogative.
I understand the walks appeal in points leagues, or maybe if it were a roto league with on base percentage, but I worry about his injury history big time when compared to the other two. Dave from Queens, New York. Which one of these players do you think will return the most value returning from their respective injuries? So we're looking not just who's going to be the best, but best value. Devin Travis, Michael Brantley, Yu Darvish, Zach Wheeler.
I'm going to rank them Brantley, Darvish, Travis, Wheeler.
I think I agree with that. Brantley never seems to go as high as I have him ranked, which means I should probably be drafting him more often.
Yeah,
I think he's a good value round. Actually, beginning in like round 7, I think he's a good value because this is a round 3 player in categories, probably round 2 in points.
You know, I'm looking at Paul Goldschmidt's page right now, and he has had a bat. He's hit 300 at least 3 straight years, and a 401, 396, and 435 on base 3 straight years. So he walks a ton. He walked 118 times last year. What justification is there for taking Harper over Paul Goldschmidt?
Oh, come on.
No, I'm serious. He steals more bases. He's 3 straight years hitting 300, unlike Harper, who just finally cracked like the 275 mark.
Who was better last year?
Harper was better last year, but Goldschmidt
has trounced him in home runs, right? Which isn't to say Goldschmidt's a bad
home run
hitter.
How many did Harper hit? 40?
43, I think.
Yeah, Goldschmidt hit 33.
And I think he beat him in runs and RBI both, right?
Well, I mean, he might have, but Goldschmidt was great. 103 runs, 110 RBI. If Harper doesn't have as good of a year as he had last year,
then he won't be as good as he was
last year.
And he won't be as good as Goldschmidt.
Probably not that either.
I just had a problem with the way you phrased the question. What argument could you possibly make? I mean,
last year is part of an argument. Yes.
But I think the broad point you're making is right. It's not really clear, despite what we're seeing in terms of precedent and mock drafts. And for auctions, I actually assign all three of them, Trout, Harper, Goldschmidt, the exact same value.
I believe
so
I do too. Yeah.
That's probably the clear indication of how much I differentiate between them.
Does it concern you that Paul Goldschmidt only stole 5 bases after the All-Star break? It's 16 before the All-Star break.
You know my answer.
You know, I do think he's a better source of steals than Harper. I'm starting to hedge on Trout because Trout has talked about stealing more bases again this season.
Yeah, he did that last year too.
Okay.
I remember us talking about, he said, I'm going to cut down the strikeouts and I'm going to steal more bases.
That's a good plan.
But really, for all three of them, I'm treating steals as a bonus.
Yes, it's the cherry on top.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if I get 5 steals from Goldschmidt all season, it's not like I'm going to be like, man, what a waste of a pick, you know?
Okay. Here's Kyle. He says, who do you think is a better late-round starting pitcher, Anthony DeSclafani or Alex Wood?
Wood.
Yeah, it's probably Wood. I'm not particularly, I don't think I'm as excited about Wood as Scott is, and I'm not as excited about DeSclafani as Al is, but I'd rather have Wood.
All right. This is from Evan in St. Louis. He says, dear Josh, Murray, and Elton. I don't know. First of all, how has Scott never seen Clueless? Oh, I think these are characters from Clueless. Well, Elton is. I don't know who the hell Josh and Murray are.
Nobody ever remembers Josh.
Oh, Josh is Paul Rudd, right?
Sure.
Okay, I don't know who Murray is.
I've seen the movie, but I don't have lines memorized or anything, so.
Well, how has Scott never seen Clueless? Adam, I was as appalled as you were when I heard this. What a classic film.
It doesn't surprise me at all. It does not seem like a Scott White type of movie.
Agreed. And they are all from Clueless. All right,
I don't feel like this is a... I've never heard anyone describe Clueless as must-see before, so...
For our age, it is.
That it's must-see, but it's one of those movies. Scott and I have had this discussion before. Scott looks at movies as more arbitrarily good or bad, where I more grade them on how much they entertained me for a variety of reasons.
Arbitrarily good or bad?
Not arbitrarily, maybe. Maybe that's the wrong way to say it. I'm saying that, like... I don't have as much of a, this was a good movie, this was a bad movie. I have more of a, this movie entertained me. This movie didn't.
So I give it, I kind of,
like, it's a bad
I look at it more academically.
You would not like the movie. It's not good, but it was entertaining. I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah, I don't like those movies that are just entertaining and have no value.
You like Clueless.
No, Clueless is a good movie.
You like Pitch Perfect though, right?
Yeah.
I like Pitch Perfect.
I like Pitch Perfect also.
So here's, but there's a, that's not a bad movie.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. There are two movies. Scott and I were both born, you were born in 84, right?
I was, yes.
I was born in 79.
All right. Scott and I were both born in 84. Heath, you're an 80s child. Scott and I are 90s children.
Okay.
Two movies that I think, I'm sure there are others, but the two that come to mind that if you're a 90s child, you have to have seen them. Clueless is one and Empire Records is the other. Empire Records is
Clueless is not in Empire Records' stratosphere.
I agree, but Empire Records
Records qualifies.
It's our Breakfast Club.
If you're a child of the 90s, those are the two movies you've had to have seen.
No. Those are the two movies that are the most, like, they're the most generational. They're like, that you probably would only like them or like them nearly as much if you were our age or around our age.
You are greatly overstating the importance of Clueless.
You haven't even seen Clueless.
I have too. Scott hasn't.
So it's sorry. You have to view the movies through 90s lenses to get it. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Empire Records is just a great movie.
Empire Records is awesome. I don't know. I'm surprised. I thought maybe that you wouldn't like it that much.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Empire Records is great. Yeah. All right. Here's a question from Evan. Can you give your expectations for Blake Snell, Rays pitching prospect Blake Snell?
Big fan of Snell. We probably don't talk about him enough. He's not Tyler Glass now, but he's in the very next rung of pitching prospects, and I don't know that he's going to be too far behind him, really. He had a sub-2 ERA in the minors last year. Some control issues like Glass now, but I think he went something like 8 straight starts to begin last season without allowing an earned run. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
And one issue for him too, to continue the comparison to Glass now, back end of the Pirates rotation stinks. The Rays probably have the third best rotation in baseball. So the trick
the
for Snell
will
be
third best rotation in baseball.
Yep. I'd rank it Mets, Indians, and then Rays. So
wow.
It's going to be hard for them to squeeze him in.
Okay. Yeah, keep him on your radar though. The Rays seem to like him. They might lock him up to a long-term deal. All right, next email. We'll do a few more here. This is from Rob Gillespie. Dear Greg, Peter, and Bobby. I know them from the movies. The Brady Bunch. I avoided drafting Billy Hamilton in my 10-team 5x5 categories league. And after the draft, someone dropped Billy Hamilton. Now he's on waivers. I'm kind of mediocre at best in steals. Would you drop any of the following for Billy Hamilton? Some of them are obvious no's, but Upton,
is it a head-to-head categories league?
Yes.
Okay.
10 teams.
Upton, Polanco, Yelich, Dickerson, Hanley Ramirez, David Peralta, Steven Piscotty.
Peralta. Yep. I like Peralta, but categories league. I mean, with Hamilton in your lineup, you know, hopefully you have some batting average to make up for his shortcoming there, but he could single-handedly win you steals most weeks.
I am the anti-Billy Hamilton guy, and I drafted him in our last draft because he fell all the way to the 14th round.
Yeah, one pick before I was going to draft him.
He should be owned in a 10-team mixed 5x5 categories league, and I've got him ahead of David Peralta.
Here's an email from Chad. With only one season above 18 home runs, do you think it's possible for Jason Hayward to hit 20 or more home runs with the Cubs this year?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. I'm betting against it, but it would not surprise me.
It's the best park he's ever played in.
On its good days.
Right.
It's such a weird park. It's the second weirdest park to Coors Field. Cause, you know, it just depends where the wind blows, literally.
I'm going to be really interested to watch Petco this year. Cause it was the third weirdest with the way that home runs left that park off the bat of left-handed hitters last year. And it can't really be explained just by their changes to the park. It was weird, and it led to a lot of weird things for almost every pitcher on their staff.
Last email. Here we go. It is from Kyle in New York City. I've been employing an unusual strategy in mock drafts for a head-to-head categories league. I'm essentially taking starting pitchers with my first four picks and filling out my offense with players known for high batting average and or steals. I'm essentially punting power, but I feel like I'm almost certain to win ERA, whip, strikeouts, wins, steals, and batting average every week, with a solid chance at runs and saves. Is this strategy too risky? Or the undisputed best idea ever?
I don't know how many times I can say it, so maybe Heath should be the one addressing it first, but I don't like punting categories. I think it assumes too much. I think you box yourself in. You want to leave yourself some room to venture a different way, to change your course if you need to.
Right.
And, this is such an extreme strategy that it won't allow you to do that. And I don't think you're guaranteed. I don't think the guarantees that you're going to win those categories is nearly as high as you're thinking, just because there's so much.
It depends on what everybody else does. I mean, if he just, with his first four picks, took Kershaw, Arrieta, Kluber, and Greinke, then yeah, I think he's pretty much guaranteed he's going to win strikeouts and wins.
One of them blows out his elbow.
Your third pitcher is still better than most teams' aces.
But you don't think any other team will have three true aces?
Yeah, in a categories league, you know, you might run into a number of weeks where you just don't have as many starts as your opponent. And
I'm going to say this. If this is a league where you're just playing for pride and for fun, and you're playing in several leagues this year, then why not? Try something different. See how it works out. Have fun. But it's not the undisputed best idea ever.
I think he'll do well. I don't know that he'll win.
I know you said that was the last email. Can I just say one thing about one of the other emails we got?
Yeah.
No. A plus plus plus, Mitch. Great job.
There you go. Mitch is giving up Chris Bryan and Billy Hamilton for AJ Pollock and Gregory Polanco in a roto league. And Heath is giving that an A plus plus plus.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, guys, thank you for your time today. Good podcast. We may or may not have a live mock draft with listeners tomorrow. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Azer for more details. I'll try to round up the troops for that. Until then, for Heath Cummings and Scott White, have a good one, everybody. I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Bye-bye.